The American Family Association's mission is to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. Our goal is to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. We believe true morality flows from biblical principles and directs people to the manner in which God intends them to live.
Thank you for standing with the American Family Association as we seek to stop the erosion of godly values.
Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. Joined in studio by Fred Jackson. Fred, good morning to you.
Good morning, Ed.
And Chris Woodward, news reporter extraordinaire for American Family News.
How you doing?
Okay.
I'll go NPR.
You
go.
Yes, that's that the NPR drone. That kind of actually, I always thought that they did a good job on NPR.
This program is not brought to you by many donations and foundations you've not ever heard of.
That's right. That's right. Well, folks, it is Wednesday, July 24th. The year is certainly slipping away. I don't know if slipping away is the right term. It feels to me like it's rocketing away. But perhaps, Fred, that is because we've had so much going on, and the last couple of weeks have just been extraordinarily busy news-wise in an already busy election year.
Well, you know, election years tend to be busy, a lot happening. But this year, you cannot compare what's been going on over the last several weeks to any other period in American political history. Let's face it, an attempted assassination on a political opponent who was president and wants another term in office. You have the current president who struggled through a debate. His party turns against him, and what I call the Knight of the Long Knives,
yes,
succeeds in getting him off the ticket.
His own political party. I don't think I've ever seen what has transpired that way.
And the stories are ongoing. Those just aren't incidents we reported on. There's now a lot of follow to all of this. On the attempted assassination of former President Donald Trump, the head of the FBI, Christopher Wray, is before a hearing in Washington today. Very interesting. I got to listen to a little bit of it before coming into the studio. Now, they are investigating Crooks, the guy who shot at the president and was eventually shot by a sharpshooter with the Secret Service. Wray says they're not investigating the Secret Service.
Right.
And what the Secret Service did and didn't do leading up to the attempted assassination.
In terms of mistakes made, poor procedures, poor planning, all that, that's separate from what Christopher Wray and the FBI are looking at.
Yes, he made that very clear this morning. However, he was asked, okay, what do you know so far, Mr. Wray? What has your investigation given us? He confirmed, for instance, that the FBI has found 8 shells, spent cartridges, because people wanted to know how many shots was Crooks able to get off
right
before he was taken down by that sniper. The other thing, some really interesting remarks from Christopher Wray on the drone. Crooks had his own drone that he put up in the air 2 to 3 hours before the assassination attempt, because they found that drone back in his car. So he flew the drone. Crooks flew this drone. He did not fly it over the grandstand where the former president was to speak, but he flew in that area around. But they found that back in the car. So he flew that drone, brought it down, put it back in the car.
Did they have some sort of footage that the drone had taken?
That was the interesting testimony. They know he transmitted pictures. Here's the interesting point. Who was he transmitting pictures to?
Right.
Was it just to himself, or was he sending this to somebody else? Because that's another question. were there other people involved? And I know you can get involved in conspiracies and all of that sort of thing. So that's that I found very interesting. And then there are the communication devices, phones or whatever, encrypted messages. They have not been able to completely decipher those yet. He says they were very sophisticated. Ray was saying that it's one of the problems for FBI now, not only in this case, but encryption is getting more and more sophisticated.
Right.
So he was sending messages, Crooks was, to somebody while this is going on. So this
he also had, right, I mean, from the week following the assassination attempt, I remember reading, I don't know whether this has changed or not, sometimes the information we get is fluid, but that Crooks, and folks, we're talking about Thomas Matthew Crooks,
yes,
the young man, 20-year-old, who tried to kill former President Trump, but that he had three offshore bank accounts that yes. were encrypted as well.
Ray did not testify to that yeah. this morning. But
that is still
yes.
what we know.
Yes. So really fascinating. Crooks is, what the picture that's being painted so far, Crooks is not just some crazy kid
right.
who got his dad's weapon and went to the roof and shot.
Right.
There's much more to this story that is yet to come. I mean, we had yesterday the resignation of the head of the Secret Service.
Yes.
Finally.
Kim Cheadle.
After she was pummeled by both Democrats and Republicans at a hearing. But now we've got this whole other aspect of, okay, who is Thomas Crooks?
Yeah.
How much planning went into this? And why all of this sophisticated technology around all of this? So you've got that going on. And then perhaps Chris has a bit of the audio that was played this morning. There's what I saw on Fox and Friends this morning is a body cam on a local police officer who was talking to a Secret Service agent. This is before the shooting took place. And there's a conversation about, hey, there's a guy over there on the roof. So this goes to what a lot of people are very alarmed about. Secret Service informed about Mr. Crooks being on the roof. Why wasn't something done right away?
Yeah, there's a lot of audio on this topic we can discuss and continue to talk about on the show. Here now is audio of a witness talking to police the day that Trump was shot. Clip 14.
Yes, Beaver County sniper seen and sent the pictures out. This is him.
Okay.
That's the sniper that sent the original pictures and seen him come from the bike and set the book back down and then lost sight of him.
Okay.
He's the one that sent the pictures out. I don't know if you got the same ones I did.
I think I did, yeah. He's like got his glasses on.
So we had the picture of that.
I got that.
Okay, and then this is his bike with the stuff. And our sniper seen him walking away from that, I believe.
Okay.
But he would be right inside that window. Physically seen this, sent the pictures, and called it out.
Okay.
Well, I'm not understanding that. I thought that was the clip of someone telling a Secret Service guy.
The picture that I saw, I'm not sure if this audio matches the picture that I saw this morning.
What was that audio of?
Well, the other audio was the one that has a lot of language in it that has been bleeped out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we won't play that until we can check it out, make sure it's okay to air. So we don't have the audio then of someone communicating. Of a local law enforcement officer communicating.
That was the indication from the video that I saw this morning.
Now, is this during the hearing? This was played?
No.
This is just Fox and Friends?
This was just Fox and Friends.
Okay.
There's so much coming out because so many people have these smartphones now.
Yeah.
And part of the audio that I saw this morning and the visual to go with it, somebody, you can hear the shots being fired by Crooks in this. So there's a whole lot of evidence for the FBI to work with at this point.
And it's always changing because the amount is changing because I saw a video, of course, we've all seen videos of the moment when President Trump was hit in the ear by one of the shots, one of the eight shots. I saw some people like scattering a little bit behind President Trump, but I saw a lady who ducked for a second and got her phone out and his video with her phone. So that kind of footage makes its way sometimes a little more slowly to the investigating authorities. And then becomes public.
Well, and the story keeps changing. Remember the day of, in the first 24 hours, we heard about the local police officer on a ladder getting up and looking at... Well, it turns out he wasn't. The police officer wasn't on a ladder. He was being held up by another officer. So that's why he couldn't get to his gun, because
jostling,
all of this going on. So just beware, folks. The stories and the accounts can change.
Right.
Because you may see something from a phone video that looks like something, but it turns out to be something else.
Yes.
So we have to be very careful. And Christopher Wray, who's been worthy of a lot of criticism over the last two or three years, but I really do believe they are doing their best right now to get to the bottom of this. But it's fascinating to me, the drone, what was that being used for, who was getting the pictures, and number two, these encrypted messages on these phones.
And let me just add this one thing. Chris, we will, as Tim always says, we will let you talk sometime here in this first segment. By the way, folks, Jenna Ellis will be with us at the bottom of the hour, host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning. We'll be talking with her, at least initially, about Kamala Harris, but who knows, she may throw in some on the assassination attempt, because more information continues to unfold. But I will say, the idea of the drone, which has, you know, has come out since that first weekend when the assassination attempt took place. But the thought of drones, because they're almost ubiquitous now, I mean, it's very easy to get one, but the thought of a drone flying above a speaker like President Trump, what does the Secret Service do in a case like that? And these drones can be turned into a deadly weapon.
They can drop things.
They can drop things. And so you wonder what kind of countermeasures the FBI or the Secret Service would have for something like that. So as technology changes, so do the threats. Christopher Wray, by the way, you mentioning, FBI director, is testifying before the House, but he says, talked about the fact that there is an elevated threat environment, something he has been saying for a couple of months now, at least a couple of months, that he's not sure who's in the country, and the expectation is that there are real dangers to the public safety because of terrorists. Chris, what else do you have?
Real quick, we are working to get the audio, or try to locate the audio that you guys were playing, and to help build off of what Fred and Ed have already discussed here with that body cam video. I have posted a link to a Fox story about that very issue. We are working to try to get you that audio.
And that is on Facebook.
As we speak. Yes, sir. It is in both the Facebook comments section, and I have posted it on the Today's Issues Facebook page itself.
Okay. All right. Okay, so is that testimony continuing today?
They had to take a break just about 15, 20 minutes ago. They had to take a break in this hearing because members of the House were going back to the House for a series of votes on something.
Okay.
So they're in recess as of about 15 minutes ago.
All right.
But that testimony will continue.
Okay. And then Chris Benjamin Netanyahu is going to be addressing Congress today.
Yes, this very well could have been the lead story.
Yes.
I mean, there's like four lead stories every day now, and we just kind of pick one to begin the show with. But yes, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is going to speak before a joint session of Congress, albeit a few people are going to be absent. That is at 1 o'clock Central today. You can watch it on C-SPAN. I have already posted the link from an AFN story about this, as well as the C-SPAN link. We will, Lord willing, if the Lord tarries, have coverage this afternoon of what Netanyahu had to tell members of Congress.
And Kamala Harris is not going to be.
No, she's not. And you would think she would be, given the fact that she's running for president of the United States, and they are our oldest and most trusted ally in the Middle East. But yes, Kamala won't be there.
Yeah.
She had a, quote, scheduling conflict because she's going places. Several Democrats, in fact, are not going to be there because they're upset with Israel's war with Hamas. Bear in mind that Israel is retaliating because Hamas attacked them back in October. But anyway, I've got a good bit of audio here on the issue of Kamala and other Democrats snubbing BB in Israel. Let's begin with this one. It's Senator Lindsey Graham on the issue of Kamala and other Democrats saying, we're not going to be there. Clip one.
It empowers the enemies of Israel. It makes America weaker in the eyes of our allies. I cannot tell you, she flunked the first test of trying to be president of the United States by picking the Hamas wing of the Democratic Party, pleasing them more than standing behind the prime minister of Israel. This is a chillingly bad decision.
I don't disagree with that. Sometimes members of opposing parties can be unfair. I mean, it is kind of a blood sport. So we want to make you bleed so that you look bad. I understand that's part of the political game. But she is vice president. This is an important visit. She is now being touted as the person who at the Democratic Party convention here in August is probably going to replace Joe Biden as the nominee. Fred, I think it's absolutely fair to criticize her for not showing up and at least meeting with him afterwards. She's not going to even meet with him afterwards, right?
Well, there is a report that tomorrow both President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris will meet with Netanyahu at the White House.
That makes me feel a little better.
Yeah. However, when Netanyahu arrived in the United States on Monday, no Kamala Harris to meet him at the airport, no Biden, no Secretary of State. This
now, is that traditionally what happens? Somebody is met?
When a head of state arrives here in the United States, at least somebody of that stature would be meeting him.
Right.
You know, and so...
Now I don't feel good.
No, Kamala Harris, you know... I know she wants to get out there and get the publicity. She's on the campaign trail, et cetera, et cetera. But to not normally the protocol calls for the vice president to be there for a speech, a joint session of Congress.
Right.
Calls for her to be there. Surely she could rearrange. Now, I think she's, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, scheduled to meet with a black sorority.
Mm-hmm.
That's what one of the visits today is all about.
Well, this has been on the calendar, the Netanyahu visit, for a while.
Yes. And given what's going on, you know, they're at war on seven fronts.
Yeah. That is, you know, she's the vice president is the president of the Senate.
Yes.
Technically speaking. I mean, they don't have to always be there for the business conducted by the Senate.
Right.
So for a joint session of Congress, for a visiting dignitary to address Congress, and like you said, Fred, under the circumstances, an ally engaged in a war, you would think she would be.
Well, if it was Zelensky of Ukraine.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Right.
Not being around for that?
You know, even if you have issues with Israel and how it's responded to its war with Hamas, which, again, Israel is retaliating because Hamas attacked them and killed women and children back in October. Even if you have issues with Israel's handling of that situation, you still send a person there because you're wanting them to come to the table. And by snubbing them, it makes them less willing to come to the table, right? And if you're going to roll out the red carpet for a dictator like Xi Jinping or somebody from China when he comes to D.C., you have to do the same thing for Benjamin Netanyahu, regardless of what some voters in Dearborn, Michigan may think about the situation.
Right. And I think Lindsey Graham's exactly right. This treatment of Netanyahu is the product of the Democratic Party either kowtowing to or being afraid of this radical wing of the Democratic Party. That it's not just Dearborn, Michigan.
Right.
It's those pushing, protesting outside the Holocaust Museum, which I saw a picture of in Boston.
Yes.
Just this week. All right. What else you got?
Speaking of Kamala, people have already began to say that if you don't like her, you are either sexist or racist or both, because she is a female and she is a person of color. Somebody who is a female and also a person of color is Stacey Washington, who went on television yesterday to say, I do not care one bit about Kamala's gender or skin color. It's about what she has stood for and supported. Clip six.
I prefer to look at policy. Kamala Harris supports the Green New Deal. She supports DEI. She supports the open southern border. She bailed criminals out of prison who went on to rape and murder other people through that huge fund, I think $65 million, Lawrence. So when we're talking about who she is and what she's doing, that's the conversation I want to have. The fact that she's Black and a woman, or Indian and a woman, those are irrelevant to me because policy trumps those things all day. I prefer to think with my mind, not my skin tone.
Oh, kind of okay. Drop the mic there.
Yeah, it's that last part is a kind of an odd metaphor. Prefer not to think with my skin tone. I understand the point she's trying to make, that this is a policy issue that we should approach in a logical fashion and not have an emotional reaction just because someone is of a similar Hamilton always say melanated skin tone.
Yeah.
Well, the problem for Kamala Harris is that she really can't campaign on what the Biden administration has done to this country over the last 3.5 years. Does she really want to go out there and talk about what a great job we did on the border? Does she really want to go out there and talk about grocery prices and what's happening with mortgages and all of that sort of thing? Does she really want to go out there and talk about climate change?
You know, I don't think she can campaign and try to defend those clear policy failures on the part of the Biden administration. But she can't run from it either. If she says, well, I disagreed with Joe all this time, but he wouldn't listen to me, then nobody's going to buy that.
I really didn't want to be the border czar, but Joe made me.
Well, that's kind of what it looks like when he assigned it to her. But, you know, that doesn't matter. You have to do what's best for the country. Mm-hmm. And coming up with a good policy on the southern border is what a border czar should do. She failed, and that's going to leave the question in voters' minds. What else will she fail at?
Well, here's another thing that's kind of coming out from the Trump camp on this. They are going to go after her for her assessment of Joe Biden, that he is sharp as a tack, you know, and I'm with him every day. And like Karine Jean-Pierre said, I'm with him every day. He's just as sharp as can be. Mm-hmm. So was she lying back then?
Yeah.
Because now she's all in on she's not criticizing the Democrats who put the proverbial knife in Joe Biden's back to get rid of him, to get him to step down from the ticket. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole bunch of things that the Trump campaign can hit her with.
Yeah, that you would think that would be a question in a debate if Harris and Trump have one. Trump wants to have one. He wants to have several. He said as much this week. You would think that would be a question from one of the moderators. How can the people trust you when you said this, but then your party turned on him or whatever else? I doubt that the moderators bring it up, which means Trump does need to somehow work it in. Maybe not at the beginning.
Oh, he will.
But
he
at
will.
Some point, he needs he, to. You he, can't trust this lady.
He's going to say, we all saw Joe Biden falling apart. And Kamala Harris was saying he was in great shape. Kamala lied the whole time. We all know what we saw. Mm-hmm. She lied. She's a liar. What else is she lying to the American people about?
Yes.
Hey, I mean, that is going to happen, which raises the question, does Kamala Harris debate Donald Trump if she gets the nomination, which it increasingly looks like she will.
Hey, speaking of Kamala and the border czar situation, one of the things Dems are saying is that she was never named the border czar. Republicans, you're just being mean to her. She was never named the border czar. Quit trying to put that on her. If you look up the definition of czar, in addition to being an emperor of Russia back in the day, a czar also means a person appointed by government to advise on and coordinate policy in a particular area. So let's go back to 2021 when Joe Biden tapped VP Harris to lead response to border challenges. He, in effect, by definition, made her the border czar.
I think all the Democrats are saying, and this doesn't fly either, is she didn't have the official title of border czar. That's splitting hairs.
It really is.
She was the border czar. Yeah. It doesn't have to come with an official title. She was in charge of the border, and she failed miserably, and she's got to defend that failure if it's at all possible. All right, folks, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, Jenna Ellis, host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning will be our guest for about 15 or 20 minutes. We are going to start off talking about Kamala Harris. Who knows where the conversation with Jenna will wind up? We just don't know. You'll have to tune back in to find out. A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there is an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. You see, when a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 will underwrite ultrasounds for the entire network for a day. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
This is today's issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week, joined in studio by Fred Jackson and Chris Woodward. Jenna Ellis, host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning, will be joining us shortly. All right. So in the previous segment, we mentioned some video about what happened in the aftermath of the assassination attempt on former President Trump after the young man who tried to kill him, Thomas Crooks, was killed by this Secret Service sniper, I think, that was the one who shot him.
On another roof.
On another roof. And so Steve Jordahl, Chris, you texted him. He got us the video, the audio.
For people watching at home, I wasn't just texting randomly during the show. I was trying to coordinate with my brother from another mother, Steve, to try to get us that audio.
So, Fred, set this up for us. What are we going to hear? You saw this video.
I saw this. This was 6:30 Central Time on Fox and Friends this morning. All right. So what you see in this video, and it appears the gentleman with the body cam that is recording this conversation, he has fatigues on of some type. I don't know whether he is a Secret Service man in full uniform or if it's a local police officer. I can't tell from that video. So he is having a conversation on a roof with a gentleman who has a black suit on and a white shirt and a dark tie.
Yes.
All right. So I'm assuming that is Secret Service. They are kind of having discussions, and this is, I'm assuming, within minutes after Thomas Crooks has been shot and killed.
And Crooks is, his body is lying at their feet, right?
Yeah. We don't see the body.
Okay.
This video. Okay. Just to make that clear.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Clip 15.
The guys that saw them filming were like, oh, they were filming us and then filming the guy up on the roof and then filming us. And then when the shots started firing, they like tried to run away. He's like, isn't that what everybody would do that has a phone? You know, I'm not saying they weren't involved, but you know what I mean? Like that.
It's up in the air right now, right?
Right. So I got no problem detaining them. Detain those guys, find out what they know, who they are, whatever. I'm trying to get clear information to relay back to D.C.
Bridge control for the water tower.
We have one shooter deceased. I think we have three victims in the crowd. Did you guys hear that too?
I'm not sure.
So I heard one deceased, two life flighted.
I know two helicopters did take off.
Yeah, okay. So.
All right. I'm a little confused. I understood the last part of that. Whoever was speaking, are they saying that there were people who did not appear alarmed at what was going on? What was that?
I'm not sure whether they're whether they're talking about people on, you know, spectators on the ground.
Okay.
So all of this is going to have to come. It's kind of imagine if you have a puzzle on a table.
Yeah.
And right now they're trying to put the pieces together.
And then someone comes and dumps another bucket of puzzle pieces
and says, "Wait a minute, this doesn't fit." All right. So basically what you were hearing just moments after Thomas Crooks was killed by the Secret Service sniper, you have these two officials, we believe a Secret Service and perhaps a local police officer, having a conversation on the roof as to what just transpired.
Okay.
So we have the deceased over here, the shooter. We have three people killed. So this is all within 10, 15 minutes.
Okay.
Crunch. So it's just another piece of the evidence that is out there that FBI Director Christopher Wray and his people are dealing with
right now. And tons of still unanswered questions.
Oh, my. Because don't forget, there's two other investigations. There's an internal Secret Service investigation, and then the Inspector General of Homeland Security is doing a separate investigation of all of this.
Okay.
So one of the questions that was asked of Christopher Wray this morning, okay, it took us 2 years, the FBI, through the Mueller investigation. Yeah. We don't want to wait 2 years for this.
Right.
We want to know information and be kept up to date.
Well, Kimberly Cheadle in her testimony said, it's going to take 60 days.
Yeah, I know.
You know, so, well, somebody who is doing her own investigation is Jenna Ellis, host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning, heard weekdays at 7 a.m. Central Time on AFR. Jenna, good morning to you.
Good morning, and great to be with you guys.
Listen, we do want to talk to you about Kamala Harris, but what is the latest that you've heard about the assassination attempt? FBI Director Christopher Wray undergoing scrutiny before Congress about some of the threats facing our country. What are you hearing?
Yeah, well, I had a Congressman Michael Cloud from Texas on yesterday, and of course, he was part of that congressional hearing where the now, thankfully, former Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle, or as people online are calling her, Kimberly Cheetos or Doritos, because she should go back to guarding Doritos as the former head of security with that, which I think is better. I mean, guard a bag of potato chips. She probably can't even do that effectively. But he was talking about how even Congress doesn't really have good answers at this point. And when we're all sitting here agreeing with people like AOC that 60 days out for a report is way too late, especially when we're, you know, less than 4 months away from the election, and the Secret Service is now telling Trump not to hold outdoor rallies. I mean, there is just so much here that we don't have answers on. I think that we have more questions currently than we even have answers.
Well, we were talking in the last segment that the threat environment, the words of FBI Director Wray, really is frightening. Now, on the one hand, I tend to put my tinfoil hat on sometimes and think, well, I wouldn't be surprised if there are people within the Secret Service, in parentheses, the deep state, who would like Trump not to have public rallies out in the open because those are incredibly popular and usually filled with tens of thousands of people. But on the other hand, I understand the concern as well amongst those in the Secret Service who truly are concerned with keeping our public servants safe, because this whole idea of a drone being used by crooks over the environment before the former president was speaking, that ramps up the potential dangers, because I don't know what the Secret Service would do if someone wanted to use a drone to take Trump out. I mean, that kind of thing happens overseas.
Well, I mean, this begs so many questions. Why they didn't have the airspace over the outdoor rally secured? I mean, even if it's an indoor rally, have that airspace secured. And there are ways of doing this. I mean, I have been with President Trump when he was President Trump at these rallies, and, you know, have been on board Air Force One with all of the security, all of the secured airspace, you know, seeing all of this, you know, having pretty go through the magnetometers, I mean, all of the security that surrounds an asset of the Secret Service is no small thing. And so just as a layperson, I mean, I have never been in law enforcement, you know, any sort of security apparatus type of job. But as someone who has been an asset themselves, you know, having protective detail and also being around President Trump with his protective detail, I mean, just from my own personal experience and observations, the level of gross negligence that I think we can question whether or not it was intentional negligence is just staggering. I mean, to not secure the airspace, allow a drone, allow this kid that was known to be a threat 30 minutes before he even walked on stage and not even delay the rally. I mean, Trump, nobody would have even thought, you know, for 2 minutes if he was an hour delayed coming out. That's just how it works sometimes at Trump rallies. I mean, not to have the rooftop secured, not having anyone on the water tower. I mean, all of these things, there were so many questions. But the question I keep asking is I would love to know how many of the immediately prior outdoor rallies of Donald Trump, like let's say just the last 10 that he's had, have they had the same equivalent type of security failures? And just by, you know, divine intervention and the sovereignty of God, there haven't been potential assassins there? Or was it just this Pennsylvania rally where a sniper happened to be? Because then you don't get into the level of, you know, all of these coincidences. Now you're talking more, you know, we're looking at something far more nefarious going.
You know, I've been, because as these puzzle pieces are getting poured onto the table as time goes on, I've seen testimony from people who've been interviewed who said, listen, we were driving our vehicle around the area to find a good parking space, and then we were watching with people. We were in clear view of the president. Nobody ever came to check us out to see if we had weapons or what we had. That's just mind-blowing to me.
It's beyond failures. I mean, you know, and again, even for me, it's somebody who doesn't have any law enforcement experience. If you had given me the resources of the Secret Service and I had planned, then I would have at least known that level of a shot with that type of building should have been within the secured perimeter. I mean, that's just literally a no-brainer. So it is staggering incompetence. And to also see former director Kimberly Cheadle testifying in front of Congress with this very cavalier, almost indifferent attitude and just saying, well, I don't know. I mean, if any reasonable person had access to the information that she does after 9 days, anyone remotely competent would have had more answers for Congress than she did.
You know, Christopher Wray this morning, Jenna's Fred here, also talked about the phones and the encrypted messages. And he couldn't go beyond that because they were so sophisticated. Yeah, it gives rise to all kinds of conspiracy. I mean, was Crooks acting alone? Who was he communicating with? Because Christopher Wray this morning said that Crooks, from that drone, he was transmitting pictures, but we don't know who was receiving those pictures. So is Christopher Wray telling us there could have been other people involved? I mean this, the more we are learning, the more it's feeding into, and I try to be very careful about conspiracy theories, the more it feeds into, at least we better investigate if Crooks was acting all alone.
Right. And what's really fascinating about that and this potential conflict now between the testimony of Christopher Wray versus the testimony of Kimberly Cheadle is that the only question that she was asked that she was willing to directly respond to with absolute certainty was that this shooter was acting alone. And that to me is interesting. How could she possibly know that if she doesn't know any of the other details that she's claiming she doesn't?
Yeah, no, absolutely. My first thought, now I just heard this from Fred during the previous segment, that the FBI's having trouble cracking the encryption.
Yes.
On his phone?
It was a communication device.
Communication device. I'm thinking, how does a 20-year-old, I mean, I don't even know if there are Radio Shacks anymore, but you don't go down to Radio Shack and get a burner phone with encryption, I wouldn't think that the FBI can't immediately crack.
Right. Well, I mean, the interesting thing about that, though, I mean, that gets into a broader policy discussion where, you know, even Apple and some of these, you know, these other big tech organizations have purposefully tried to say, no, you have privacy in your devices, even if there is potential evidence of criminal conduct on your phone. We are not going to give the password or allow law enforcement access. So even something as simple as my iPhone, it's not anything that I've done with it. It's that the device itself comes secure enough that law enforcement generally cannot penetrate it without a password and so forth. So that part of it really doesn't surprise me. And as much as, you know, we would love to see what's on that, from just a general 30,000 foot policy perspective, I am very much for data privacy and not having law enforcement be able to so easily access content.
Yeah. So you have to get a warrant. And even then, there might be a fight with some of the social media companies.
Or even an ability, because, you know, Apple has consistently said, listen, you know, we don't even keep the technology that we can access someone's personal phone so that we have to tell law enforcement, sorry, we can't help, so that then they don't open themselves up to further potential liability.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's a really interesting policy discussion.
All right, let's switch gears here and talk about Kamala Harris. Chris, you've been waiting patiently.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, Jenna, what's your initial? Give me your initial reaction to Kamala Harris. Do you think she is absolutely now going to be anointed as the nominee at the convention? And then, Chris, you have some interesting audio. We'll get to Jenna's reaction to some of these things that Kamala Harris herself has said in the past. Jenna, what's your first blush reaction?
Well, I think there's no question she will be the nominee. As of yesterday, she has now secured enough delegates that she will be the presumptive nominee. And it's fascinating to me that Democrats, who have consistently said democracy is on the ballot, have now anointed a person who nobody has voted for. The last time she was on a ballot, got less than 1% of the voting base. And now suddenly Democrats are completely okay with this, even though this disenfranchises their entire primary. But they're okay with it because they hate Donald Trump that much.
Yeah. I got to tell you, I've never seen anything like what we have seen unfold here, where a political party goes and protects the candidate, Joe Biden, lying through their teeth the whole time. Everybody with two eyes and two ears could see that Joe Biden was not up to the job, but they lied over the last 6 months. Oh, absolutely. He runs the table primary after primary. And then the party itself, on the basis of one debate, basically knifes him in the back like he was Julius Caesar.
Yeah. And it's really, and this has definitely never happened in exactly the same fashion, but interestingly, this whole concept of a brokered convention and what happened in the presidential election of 1968 is actually what led to the primary process that the Democrats have implemented since then, and Republicans then in 1972 went ahead and adopted that same process, because current President Lyndon B. Johnson announced he wouldn't run for re-election, and his then current sitting vice president, Hubert Humphrey, secured the Democrat nomination in 1968 despite not entering any primaries or caucuses. And a lot of the Democrats at the time were concerned about legitimacy in a kind of process where regular Americans don't participate. And yet now they're suggesting that Kamala Harris is somehow a legitimate selection, when historically the Democrats not only disfavored that type of brokered convention in 1968, but they actually changed their process for more transparency. But here's the really fascinating, and this is where I just love history, because Democrats didn't win the 1968 election. The former vice president, then Richard Nixon, who was the Republican nominee, defeated the current incumbent vice president, Humphrey. And Trump has been compared to Nixon in a lot of other ways and for a lot of other reasons in the past. So will history repeat itself and a Republican former executive branch officer defeat a current Democrat VP incumbent who, in the same fashion as Hubert Humphrey, didn't enter any of the primaries or
caucuses. That's very interesting.
This election season is why I haven't slept since last year.
Don't think you're going to get any more sleep between now and November.
It's true.
Chris, some of the things that Kamala Harris has said in the past could be problematic going forward to November. And then we'll get play to your heart's content, and each time we'll get some comment from Jenna.
I believe I will. Here's one from Kamala back in the day talking about ICE. Clip 5.
Abolish ICE.
Yeah.
Is that a position that you agree with?
Listen, I think there's no question that we've got to critically re-examine ICE and its role and the way that it is being administered and the work it is doing, and we need to probably think about starting from scratch.
You support giving universal health care, Medicare for all, to people who are in this country illegally?
Let me just be very clear about this. I am opposed to any policy that would deny in our country any human being from access to public safety, public education, or public health, period.
Real quick, one other thing here for anybody that might say, well, she wasn't running for president at the time, or, you know, this time's different. Any kind of excuse now, here's what she had to say yesterday in Milwaukee, clip 13.
And in this campaign, I promise you, I will proudly put my record against his any day of the week.
So what record? Hey, Jenna, she said that basically she is willing to consider scrapping ICE. That doesn't mean necessarily she would replace it with nothing, but that she is open to giving people who are here legally or illegally all the benefits that accrue to American citizens, whether they pay taxes or not. That's going to show up in some Republican ads, eh?
Yeah, well, and let's not forget that she was the appointed border czar, and now Axios is rewriting history in an Orwellian fashion, claiming that, no, that was just a Republican tag on her, but yet literally their own exact same reporter who claims that had a piece about 2 years ago in the very same publication saying that she was the border czar. So, you know, there's a lot of Orwellian hypocrisy going on right now. And of course, you know, Republicans are going to attack her policy positions and all of that. But here's the thing, is that Democrats have always been, you know, very pro globalism, pro open borders, pro a Marxist utopia. And the second clip that you played, you know, about her saying, oh, you know, I'm all for securing, you know, public. One, does that include the unborn public safety? I'd love to know the answer to that question. but second, does all of this public, that goes right into this entire Marxist, communist, Leninist, Maoist notion that the state is the parent, and that we are all subservient, and there's no such thing as individual property rights, there's no such thing as parental rights, there's no such thing as self-government. It all comes down to the bourgeois and the proletariat and this whole class warfare system. That's what she's going for. And if Team Trump, and also us as conservatives, if we are very serious about actually evidencing and proving who Kamala Harris is, it's not about attacking her specific record on any of these comments. It's about showing comprehensively she has always fundamentally had the same worldview, which is not just liberalism, it's communism. It is Marxism. And I would go a step further from the biblical worldview. It's literally Satanism and Luciferianism. And I did an entire segment on Monday that people should listen to from my show talking about her Satanist incantation from the occult in some of her what people think of as ballad and her hand gestures. It's actually a Luciferian incantation. But the bottom line is that her entire worldview goes back to the Garden of Eden, that we can be like God, we can make our own utopia, we are God. And who is the we in this instance? It is the elitists, the very same people that brokered the deal to install her as the Democrat nominee anyway. So this goes fundamentally to a clash between not only right and wrong, but good and evil. And it's not just about one policy position. It's about her overall view of government, which is you will own nothing, you'll be happy, you will shut up and take it.
Yeah, everything that Jenna says, is I believe, something that in particular evangelical voters need to need to think about. Yeah. But also, some of these words when she talks about, yes, I believe in public education for everybody in the country. I believe health care, all of that sort of thing. This has already caused the Democrats some problems. Has these illegals, tens of thousands of them, had made their way into Democrat strongholds.
And like, more coming.
Like Chicago and New York. We have had black residents who normally, traditionally, vote Democrat up in arms. What it's doing to their school systems.
Right.
Their kids are being negatively impacted already by the thousands of these kids, of these illegal immigrants coming into the system, and the system cannot handle it. And their kids are being impacted by this. Chicago, New York, Minneapolis. This is going to be a problem. If she stands by these political points that she's made through the years, this is going to perhaps cost her in constituencies that the Democrats need to win.
45 seconds, Jenna.
If they can connect that policy directly back to Kamala Harris, because what you're seeing is an overt attempt to use her skin color to say, I look like you, therefore I'm the champion of you. And Democrats have been very successful at pushing that in the past. And so it's going to be very difficult, quite frankly, for conservatives to educate these people to say, let's connect what you're experiencing, what you hate, the policy, to the appropriate candidate that's responsible for that. That's our job.
All right. I'm going to ask you a question, 15-second answer. Do you think Kamala Harris is going to be a pushover in the election? A lot of people think she's a joke. Do you think she's a pushover?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And the worst thing we can do is underestimate her and the millions and millions of dollars behind her.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, Jenna, thank you so much for being on with us today. Who you got coming up tomorrow? Do you know yet?
We actually don't know yet. We're still in the middle of doing the show, because it's going to be interesting with the speech today, and then of course Bibi Netanyahu coming up at 2 p.m. So, you know, a lot of news to cover tomorrow.
Thank you, Jenna. Folks, we're going to take a 5-minute break for news, and when we come back, Steve Paisley Jordahl will be in, and guess what? More news to talk about.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.